collect. So I hope you guys enjoy them.
Thank you.
And this song's called Let There Be Peace. So is that in the book? Or?
Thank you. For bringing us reminiscences of Grandpa's squeeze box.
Hi, everybody. Okay. So thank you all for coming. You've got a program in front of you. So important logistics first. There are bathrooms are down there. They're very small because Frank Lloyd Wright himself was small. And physically, but he was a giant in every other way. And then the only handicap accessible bathroom is down the hall, and then you'll see signs and arrows to the left. And there's also one more regular bathroom down there. In case you haven't made the tour down the hall. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a song by Carolyn, so my sister. And then Rick's going to say a few words. Where did it go? And then it's going to be a Quaker style or a Unitarian style sharing of stories. So anybody who wants to get up and speak, you can come up. Or a microphone. We'll bring a microphone to you. And these, again, Frank Lloyd Wright, these are awfully low, so it's kind of hard to get up and down. So, Carolyn is coming on.
Written by a friend of mine. You've always been there, but now you are where? Out in the show you what's true. I hope.
question in anybody's mind here how much he loved you. Welcome all to a celebration of the life of Michael Briggs. Mike's children and grandchildren are appreciative of your presence and thank you for coming. My name is Rick Recking. The reason I'm standing here is I volunteered. Mike Briggs, what a man. He was generous, welcoming, accepting, and kind. A man who sought joy and relished mirth. A man who respected others and loved children, cats, scotch, and koi. A man of music, a man of love, faithful husband, loving father, our friend, Mike Briggs. Mike was resourceful as he prepared the dance floor of his life. He was skillful to set the tunes by which it would be played. And he was wise enough to allow his love to call the dance. He is missed by all who would have loved to dance to his music once again. Today's celebration anticipates your participation. And I urge those who would like to speak to come forward now and speak. And then I will carry a mic on one side and maybe somebody else on another. So please feel free.
John asked me to grease the wheels for this participation, so I will. My name is Barbara Park, and I met Mike when I started to go to Prairie UU in the late 1970s. Mike was many things to many people. To me, he was the consummate musician. He would make music anytime two or more were gathered together. This might be at church, around a campfire, at someone's houses at our annual musicales, at the bar at Upper Woods, or most recently, as we all gathered to remember Ruth Calden, which was wonderful because that was the last time many of us got to see him. Folk songs, old standards, old hymns, he knew them all. At Prairie, if there was a hymn that you wanted to sing and get people to stand on their feet and start clapping along, Mike was your man to play it. The song, Give Me That Old Time Religion, comes to my mind. If you could hum a tune, he would try to play it along with you. If you knew some of the words, he knew them all. And I don't mean just the first verse. He knew verse 5 and 6. I thought I knew him, but man, oh man, he could beat me. I have to get my next page here. He knew all the lyrics. It didn't matter how complicated that were, he knew them all. His memory of songs was encyclopedic. We've lost a good musician and a very good friend.
My name is Chuck Snowden, and I'm representing the Scottish Dancers with my kilt, and one of the major things that Mike was interested in. However, my first meeting with Mike was a very different thing. He was a very intimidating person. I was with a group that was petitioning the city council to do something, and he was questioning us, and he was a large man with a loud, deep voice. And it could be incredibly intimidating when he started questioning us about what our motives were, why we wanted to get something from the city council, which we thought was perfectly reasonable. It was to set up a new clinic for low-income women to have access to health care. And I think he was very supportive of the idea, but he still had a sharp mind and was, before he even became a lawyer, was asking sharp questions. I met a very different person a few years later. Some people came into town who knew how to do Scottish dancing. They started a Scottish dance group back in 1976 or 77, and Debbie Nelson and I were among the first people to do that. And a year or so later, Mike and Norma joined, and it became a passion for them. Norma went on to get a teaching certificate so she could teach Scottish dance, and we ended up with Norma coming, Mike and Norma coming almost every Sunday night, except when they decided to take a vacation now and then, to teach Scottish dance. It was a really important part of their lives. And for those of us who are Scottish dancers over this period of time, a really important part of our lives as well. One of the things the Scots like to do is to get together, not just with recorded music, which is what we do most of the time, but we like live music, and we have balls occasionally. And one of the great things was after a year or two when we were dancing to recordings, Mike said, I can put together a musical group and we can have live music instead. Wouldn't you like that? And we all agreed, yes, that would be wonderful. So for many, many years, we'd have our annual ball, and we just have Mike and various people that he would recruit to help play for us, and we have this most wonderful music. In the last few years, we've had to go to other people because Mike was getting hard. It was getting harder and harder for Mike to organize a whole evening of music. But he would be in charge. He'd find the instrumentalists. He'd do the arrangements. He'd work out all the tunes, because in Scottish dancing, you may repeat something 8 times in a row, but you don't want to dance to the same damn music for 8 consecutive times. So you want something else along the way that will complement what the first tune was. And so this was very much a very important part of all of us who are Scottish dancers over the last 40-some years. So we will miss Mike a great deal. The last speaker brought up something that I want to emphasize as well. In German, the word Mensch means human being. But as it comes to Yiddish and has been translated into English, Mensch has a very different meaning. Mensch is someone who is has a person of integrity and honor and trust. And I think for all of us here, Mike was a Mensch.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff, and I first met Mike Briggs when I was about 10. That was back when the Briggs lived on Westlawn Avenue, a couple doors down from the Willards. And that was probably about the time when the Prairie Chicken Pluckers, which was a bluegrass band for Prairie Unitarian, I don't know if some of you remember that, but that was happening. And my dad was a fiddle player for that, Joe Lawrence, and Barbara James, who is now my stepmother, played guitar. And that's how I knew the Briggs. And, you know, we would go there on Wednesdays for rehearsals, and we'd do, like, Christmas things together and stuff like that back in Westlawn. And, you know, after about my teens, I kind of lost track of the Briggs and Mike and stuff, and that went on for about 30 years or so. But eventually, in my mid-40s, I got into Morris dancing. Hi, Morris dancers. I see you over there. There you are. And it came a time when I decided, well, I should, like, actually play a musical instrument, too. So I was at a Morris sale, and I said to my stepmother, you know, if you get me an accordion, I'll learn how to play it. And what she said was, I tell you what, I'm going to get a new accordion for myself so you can have mine. So I was pretty much committed to learning the accordion. And, of course, I went straight home after the ale, and then the accordion sat there for 4 or 5 months. But eventually, I started practicing, and a couple months afterwards, I come home, and there's a note posted to my door, which says, like, hey, I was wondering if you might want to have some help about the squeeze box. And Mike. So, okay, so I called him up, and we set things up, and, you know, for an hour a week, ostensibly, it often went much longer than that. For about an hour a week, on a regular time, we get together, and we play. And, you know, after a few years, you know, it got to be less of a teaching thing, and we were just playing together and hanging out and, you know, shooting the shit and being sarcastic at each other, you know, like the way that Mike Huffman is. And that went on for 6 or 7 years, and past the time when he ended out in Capitol Lakes, And eventually, let's see, Evan's there. Eventually, Evan joined on, and David, I don't see David. And we started calling ourselves Mafia, actually, which is Madison Area, Madison Accordion Friends in Action. And, yeah, Mike made that up. He came up with that. And there came a time, you know, a couple of years ago, when I had to go to California to take care of my own parents who, you know, were fading as well and needed some help. But, you know, I always came back to the Ale to see Mike, and we play again in Capitol Lakes, and I saw him in May. And that was the last time I saw him, but it was a very sweet thing. The one last thing I should say is that there's a lot of people who send their love, who I should mention, they send their love to everybody. My parents, Jill Lawrence and Barbara James, they can't travel anymore, but they send their love. The Willard family, all those people, Martha Deal, Nellie Werger, a friend from Dancing Judy Goldsmith couldn't make it, but she sends her love to everybody. Allison Sychek now, who used to play a lot for folk dancing with Mike Briggs and my dad, Joe, and my stepmother, Barbara. She sends her love. And that's pretty much my story. I mean, I'll just say that I always loved Mike Briggs dearly, and I'm sorry he's gone, but there's a lot to celebrate about who he was and the life he led.
My name is Sarah, and Oric, I don't know if that last name means anything to anyone other than Briggs, the Briggs family, but my family lived in Nigeria at the same time that the Briggs family and the Garrison family lived there. And my brothers and I are all the same ages as Helen, Marion, not Carolyn, because Carolyn is older than all of us, and John. John and I are 14 days apart, we just figured out. And the Briggses left before I was born, so I think your mom was pregnant with you when you left. And fast forward several years later, it's still in contestant whether it's 79 or 77, but I spent the summer in Madison, and it was the year my parents split up. And my parents sent me to live with you, and they didn't tell me until after I got home that they had split up, but they had had me stay with the Briggs family to kind of ease me into their separation. Oddly enough, they got back together, but another story. But what I remember most, I remember a few things. I remember Carolyn was already out of the house, and I hung out a lot with Marion and Helen and Di Sobeck. Was that her last name, Ben? Okay. And I don't have any sisters. I have brothers. Older brothers, very obnoxious brothers. And suddenly I had these two teenage girls. They took me to the mall. They showed me how to put on makeup. They did all these things that my brothers and their skateboards didn't know how to do. And the other part that was really cool is that my father wasn't the nicest father, but I had Mike. For a summer, I had Mike. And he would play back then. I didn't even know he played the accordion until recently, but he played the banjo back then, and he played a lot of what I used to call hillbilly music, but he played what he called bluegrass. And he played some funny songs for me, and nothing I'd ever heard of before. And he told me stories about his childhood, and told me about you kids growing up. And for a summer, I had an opportunity to feel like I was part of a family, and that I had a really nice dad, and two sisters, three sisters, but now we're more sisters now that we're older. And it was an amazing summer. It was an amazing summer. And I never thought I'd say, because I'm from New York City, so I never thought I would say that Madison, Wisconsin was like the most amazing experience I ever had. But it really was. To that point in my life, it was really the most amazing experience I'd ever had. And Norma, like my mother, was very introverted, and so I didn't really see a whole lot of her. Mike did the cooking. Mike did the entertaining. Mike, if I was having a bad, you know, I talked to my parents, and I kind of had a bad call, he'd play some banjo music. The banjo, I guess, was supposed to, you know, make me feel better, but it did. And so my memories of Mike are mostly as a child, and then Facebook. Facebook allowed us to reconnect and allowed me to reconnect with all of you, and now reconnect with grandchildren. And Mike, a lot of people see, I think that we've all got this image of Mike in our minds, whether you knew him as a young person or if you knew him when you were older, if you knew him as one of his kids or grandkids. I don't think there's a single person around who can say anything negative about Mike. What I think of when I think of Mike is a mentor, always supportive. Even if he didn't agree with something that you were doing, he was still supportive. And a good friend, somebody who listened, somebody who offered really good advice, and somebody who was just there. And when my parents died, my mother died when I was 27, and I got a call from Mike, and it was just, it was wonderful. It was really good, because I don't really know what he said, but what he said was very comforting. And he said, I know what he said. My mother was a singer, and he said, your mother is singing with the angels. Five words or whatever. So for all of you who got to know Mike through the years and got to really see him on a daily basis, I'm jealous, because he was a good man. And looking out at all of you, I see just how many people loved him and who he loved. And he was a very loved person. And so, thank you. And I'm here representing my whole family. My parents, who are both now deceased, and my brothers, who are scattered in different parts of the country, and I live in Puerto Rico. And I will say that he and Carolyn and Marion came to Puerto Rico in March, and I kind of knew that would be the last time I'd see him alive. And it was okay. It was okay. I mean, I knew that was the last time I was going to hug him, the last time I was going to say anything to him in person. And I think we both knew, but he made the trip, which is pretty amazing, considering, you know, he was already in a wheelchair by then, and he made the trip. And through him, I've gotten to re-know Helen and Marion and Carolyn again, and all of your kids and everything, and John. And John, you've done a really good job of putting this together. You did a really good job. And got to meet John and his wife and his mother-in-law. So anyway, thank you.
My name is Rebecca Finster, and I just want to tell a little story about Mike and his sense of humor, his wonderful, wonderful sense of humor, and he liked to play practical jokes on many people. And so I was part of a group called the Few Street Singers, and Mike wasn't a part of it, but came to us one day. This was when he was actually on the city council, I believe, and he explained to us that they had told him it was his turn to say the prayer before the city council meeting. Now, I don't know how many of you know Mike, but that wasn't something he was going to do. So he he told us that he wanted it to be a surprise for them. And that he was going to ask us to get as many of the few street singers together and come to the city council meeting, wait outside the door until right before the prayer, and then throw open the doors, and we walked in and saying, "Hard times come again no more." Which I hope some of you know, because it was so perfect for them. He would fight with them so much. So that's my story. I knew him in the 70s and on. I was on the Morris team for a while. And his sense of humor was unbelievably wonderful. And I will miss him forever. You're a wonderful, wonderful.
Good afternoon. My name is Tukuma John Ude. I'm the stepson of Norma and Michael Briggs. I'm a retired medical doctor. I first met Mike and Norma in Nigeria in 1962. I didn't have any books of my own. My uncle that I was staying with worked for Mike and Norma. And Norma saw me and gave me some books to read. The books were science fiction. I didn't know anything about science fiction. I still don't like science fiction. That got me interested in books. And till today, everywhere I go, I carry a book with me. And I like to read. The Briggs sent me to secondary school. They paid for me to get education in Nigeria. They sponsored me to come to this country in 1969, in the middle of the Biafran War in Nigeria. I lived with a family for 4 months. John was just a baby at that time. They helped me get into medical school here in Madison, where I got my medical degree. I did my residency in Milwaukee, and my wife and I moved to California in 1981, where I practiced for 35 and a half years. The Briggs treated me like any of their children. I had a lot of complaints and they endured them. I never saw Mike complain. He had a lot of medical problems and he dealt with them with honor and perseverance. He never complained once. The last time my wife and I saw him was in May this year. He was not very happy with me because he thought I should have done more to help children in Nigeria, even though my wife and I had tried to sponsor a lot of kids to university education there. So I still will try to maybe make him happy someday. I lost my parents, my real parents, quite a few years ago. My mother about 33, 34 years ago. My real father in 1981. But Mike and Norma were, in a sense, my parents. And of course, John is not little anymore. He's 52, but he's my younger brother. But we should celebrate Mike's life. Because he provided, he actually made a lot of people happy. He made a difference in this world, and as did Norma. So I thank all of you, and I thank Mike and Norma. Everything that I have achieved in this world is because of them. So please thank you for being here for us to celebrate his life. Thank you.
Thank you. like through Prairie Unitarian. And I think I got a little closer to Mike when I learned that he was doing contra dances down in Paoli. And so I went to a few of them, Paoli, what is it, 15 miles away, and they were putting on contra dances up on the top of an old storefront or something. It was the second floor, and it was pretty rickety, but we had a lot of fun. And I took a friend of mine, and she said, I think this would be, contra dancing would be great.
All right, now we can really hear me. She said, I think this would be great for women's dancing. And Apple Island was a place over on East Washington at that time. And she said, and we should have a women's band. And then she tried to recruit me to be in it. And I said, well, I'm a school teacher. I don't have time for that. But she was pretty convincing. And so I think she put an ad in the paper. And we gathered about four or five of us and became a women's band. And eventually we called ourselves Dark of the Moon Contraband. And then we started playing for Apple Island dances, contra dances. So that's how we got our start in 1995, and we're still going. That band is the one that's already been mentioned. Not the contraband, but the one that Mike was part of. It included Barbara James and Joe Lawrence. And I want to mention also that Mike often played for Prairie Services. And he'd first play in the ordinary key, and then he'd play up an octave, and then maybe up another octave. And he'd always make it sound like he really wanted to just dance to it. And then after the service, you know, everybody'd be milling around and talking, and he would just step up to the piano again. And if anyone else wanted to step up there with him, and sometimes I would have my guitar or harmonica, so I'd step up with him. And that was always a lot of fun. And then I want to mention something else. Mike had a lot of presence. Somebody talked earlier about how he could be kind of intimidating. But he had a presence, and it was perfect for a solemn occasion. And when my ex-husband died, we don't have a minister, or didn't have a minister at all at Prairie at that time. And then, who's going to conduct the service? Well, I thought of Mike immediately, and he did a wonderful job. You know, he just gave it the solemnity it needed. I remember we played When the Saints Go Marching In, and we had a great time doing that. And he also had a streak for display and drama. Well, I'm wearing my little ears here again. I think he would approve. I remember a picture I took of him at Prairie. We have an actual prairie, and we burn it almost every year. And I had a wonderful picture that I haven't been able to find where he's silhouetted against the flames of the prairie, and, you know, he's making himself even bigger than he was. So, and then finally, I'd like to just say that when he got so he couldn't get around on his own walking, he got a scooter. And he drove that scooter all the way from the square, you know, from Capitol Lakes, all the way down to Prairie, which is about 5.5 to 6 miles, to play the piano for us. And we really appreciated it.
A long time ago, when John was the same age, their youngest was the same age as my first, I met them at the Montessori school. Just fascinating couple. Couldn't, you know, get enough of little short visits with them. African bibliographer, I mean, good heavens, I didn't even know there was such a thing. And then some years later, we moved from the east side to the west side, and down the street on West Lawn was this fascinating Briggs family with, you know, a lawyer and a lawyer. It took me a long time to pick out it was the same person. But, you know, in these recent years, I've reconnected with Carolyn, and the whole family represents to me the continuity of love. I am just so grateful for all the gifts. Norma rescued my soul at a time when I was completely broken. But what I really wanted to share just now was that Mike had a talent for finding people's skills. I was a grad student in Greek and Latin, working as a science editor, typed 99 words a minute, and he said, "You're the one who can type, proofread, format, and design our little pocket dance book." Those little codes. They were all brand new to me. Again, something I had never seen. But Mike said, "You're the one." And I thank him.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nevina Smith. I'm here representing my family. Hi. And, gosh, we've known the Briggses for longer than I can possibly even remember. I met Carolyn when we were in high school together, but we've known the Briggses much longer than that. My parents have. They've been friends for a very long time. And I was just sitting here remembering my father's funeral, memorial service. And Mike came, and he sang all these songs, and we had a songbook for him, too. And one of the things that they and my parents shared was a love of the Afrikaner songs, which nobody else knew. It's one of those obscure things that my parents learned when they were in college in Berkeley. And they knew all the words, and Mike knew all the words. And Mike did a wonderful job of singing and leading everybody in that. And it was very, my father would have loved it. He would have absolutely loved it. And my mother can't be here today. As most of you know, she recently broke her hip, so she's in recovery. And she doesn't get around very much. She doesn't get out very much. But she wanted me to share something. She said, "Mike loved this little poem as much as she did." She said, "Nobody else appreciated it." But she asked me very specifically to share it with you. So it's very short. There once was a puffin, just the shape of a muffin, and he lived in an island in a deep blue sea. And he ate little fishes, which were most delicious, and he ate them for breakfast, and he ate them for tea. But this poor little puffin, he couldn't play nothing, for he hadn't anybody to play with at all. So he sat on his island, and he let out a sigh, and he felt very lonely, and he felt very small. Then along came the fishes, and they said, "If you wishes, you can have us for playmates instead of for tea." So they all play together in all sorts of weather, and the puffin eats pancakes like you and like me.
I'm Gretchen Tweetmeyer. I'm another West Lawner. And when we first moved to West Lawn, my daughter was 6 months old, and each and every one of the Briggs kids babysat for her at one time or another. Thank you. She turned out really well. So you should congratulate yourselves. I remember, well, the Briggs were always so welcoming. I remember one time they invited me over to sing with the shape note singers. Are there any shape note singers here? Okay, because I really didn't know who they were, and I can't remember who they were, but it was so much fun. And, you know, Mike would play the piano, and I would get to sing, and, you know, all that was wonderful. And then, after a time, they left West Lawn, and I was heartbroken, particularly because the people who moved in afterwards took down their purple shutters. And I lived kitty corner across the street, and I had lost my borrowed view. And I wish somebody would find them and put them back. Anyway, then I connected again with Mike around Music Night. He would come to Music Night a lot, and I see some people from Music Night here. And Mike and Norma had that lovely home out in Paoli, or around near Paoli, and Music Night would happen there, and that was always a wonderful experience, just to walk around on the prairie and the grounds and sing the songs. And they would take us down to the campfire, and they would make us sing without books and without words and songs that we didn't know, but that was just fine. They insisted that we would do that. And then, you know, Mike went to Capitol Lakes, and it happens that I swim there, so I saw him there, like, all the time.
And he was always going around on his scooter, although I had no idea he went as far as Perry. But you'd see him downtown and all that. He was wonderful. Family was wonderful. And I just feel a lot of gratitude that he was in my life.
Well, my name is Bonnie Gruber, and I did not live on West Lawn. I lived on the other side, not of the tracks, but of the Monroe Street, Nevada Park neighborhood. So I first met Mike when we were active in our respective neighborhoods about things involving the business district there, like what was then known as the Randall State Bank that was wanting to expand in its little landlocked space. And then it was beginning of 1977, I believe, that I ran for the city council for the first time. Mike ran for the city council for the first time. Sheila Chafee, the third district that is near the Randall Bank, ran for the first time. And Mike observed that we were all about the same generation, and most people at that age have a midlife crisis. Instead of that, we ran local government. And the three of us all won. We worked together on a lot of issues. And but I think probably my most vivid memory of Mike was when he wrote a resolution in the form of a song for four-part vocal. So he was the bass, and he recruited three more of us to be soprano, alto, and tenor. And this thing, I don't remember the whole thing, but it started, whereas at the end. It's the only time I've sung a solo on the radio. So I thank Mike for that, but more importantly, his service to his district and the city are something that we should all remember. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rich Baumann. You can't tell whether the mic's on or not with me. I came to Madison in 1986 to sing on State Street, and I was only here a couple of weeks when I was singing a Stan Rogers song, and Mike came and stopped, and he hung out until the end of the song, and we talked, and he invited me to come and sit in with his band the next night at the Great Hall. And in the meantime, I went out a little extra and got a ticket from the police for loud and unreasonable noise. It wasn't my fault. I was singing with Rock and Roll Dave, and he was courting a waitress at Ella's Deli. After the Great Hall, Mike divvied up the cash, and then he said, "Oh, I forgot to save any for you. Well, I'll defend your ticket." And we won. Two years later, Mike called me and said, "The city's appealing that ticket." And we won. 7 years later, it went to the Supreme Court. And we lost. I had to pay a $25 fine. It was well worth it to get to know Mike Briggs, and I really had lots of encounters with him over the years. Most recently, I've done a couple of programs at Capitol Lakes, and we sat at the piano for a while at the end, and just a few months ago. And what a blessing. Thank you, Mike Briggs.
Hi, I'm Rosemary Dorney, and I'm trying to think how long I've known Mike. I've known Mike since Carolyn and my daughter were friends. Carolyn, when would that have been? Age 10 or something like that?
Probably.
Yeah.
69 or 70, yeah.
I remember when John was 4. That's a long time ago. You've done very well, though. I'm amazed. I remember your earlier years. Everybody's talked a lot about Mike and music, and certainly I love singing with him. I love the way he transposed. I envy him for that. You're right about the words, but I want to say something about words. Mike was a wordsmith. He knew, he had a vocabulary like you wouldn't believe, and he also included quite a few words from other languages, and he had studied Latin, and I was a Latin scholar, and all through his life, when he used a Latin phrase to emphasize something, he'd look over at me and tell me later at least one person understood what he was talking about. And when he became an attorney, as I did also, it was more frequent. But I used to go to him when I was puzzled about the way a word was defined or where it came from. Or it was used in a very different way. He always knew. He always knew. And it's an odd hobby, if you call it that, to be interested in words and how they're put together and where they come from. But it was really nice having somebody in my life who also was interested in that and was better at it than I was.
Shy when I first came to Madison, and when I met Mike, I said to him, "You know my dad," and he said to me, "But I know you," and that was such a compliment. I just never forgot it. He was so kind. And when the singing was happening at Upper Woods, and we went to the bar, we sang with such gusto we took over the bar. One time there was a wedding reception there, and they all sang along with us. We had a wonderful time. I will miss Mike. He has brought a lot of joy to our lives. He's a good man.
I am Joanna Thompson, and I'm sort of representing the English country dancers. My husband and I have known Mike for a long time. My husband is a Morris dancer and a Scottish country dancer. I have done a little Scottish country dancing, but that's all. But maybe 5 years ago, Mike started playing for the English country dance group, along with Carol Orman, about once a month. And I think while he did that, he mentored a good number of other musicians who are maybe playing with us today, and I hope will be continue to play in his absence. The last time he played for us was right before his accident. It would have been maybe a week before. And we were dancing in James Reed, and he came over in his scooter, which I thought he would never do because of all the construction down there, which is just awful. And so we will really miss Mike.
Want to say one thing briefly. I'm Claudia, also known as Claire Rohr, and I first became acquainted with the Briggs family when I was a child in the 60s, early 70s maybe. But about 20 years ago, I first got involved in Scottish dancing, and shortly after that, Irish dancing as well. And the thing that I most treasure about Mike is that he explained to me about the rhythm structure of a jig, that you can count it in both threes and in fours. And I have become in love with jigs since then. They are very joyful, joyful music. And I will always think of Mike when I hear a jig or dance to one.
turned out okay, I suppose. It was all because of my dad, yeah. And my mom. And my sisters. Yeah. So there are some people who couldn't come, and they emailed stories. This one is from Betsy Wiener. She lives out on the East Coast, so just north of New York City. Mike Briggs was an extraordinary person. Smart, talented, and kind, full of fun. But you know that. What you may not know is how we are connected. It started in the fall of 1956 when my late husband, Michael Wiener, so we got two Mikes going here. So it started in the fall of 56 when Betsy's late husband, Michael Wiener, was at the University of Exeter during his junior year away from Oberlin College in Ohio. Michael and Mike met at Exeter that year. Music and laughter were some of the things that drew them together. My Michael came back to the States with a 5-string banjo. After Michael graduated from Oberlin and almost had completed his master's in urban planning at the Pratt Institute, he and I were married and set up housekeeping in a small apartment in Brooklyn. Norma and Mike were our first dinner guests at the Brooklyn apartment when they stayed with us after they'd arrived in New York from England and were making their way to North Carolina, which is where all three of my sisters were born. For me, a beginning cook, it was at first nerve-wracking. But the evening fast turned to music and laughter, muy simpático. Fast forward many years after sporadic contact with Mike and Norma, I was working as the director of college relations at Westchester Community College and had been tasked with writing a sexual harassment policy for the faculty. Not wanting to reinvent the wheel, I searched for policies I could crib from and found one in Madison, Wisconsin, that had been written by somebody connected with its office for women, Norma Briggs. Connections were reestablished, and they never let up after that. After my husband Michael died, I traveled about. I had a wonderful visit with Mike and Norma at their house in Oregon. Norma's garden was so lovely. After Norma died, Mike came east several times to see his son, John, who lives in Manhattan with his wife, Lena. When Mike visited New York, he and John and Lena took the train north from New York City to visit me at my house. On one of those visits, Mike even brought to life an old button accordion in my house that had been bought at a flea market and had been languishing away under a harpsichord in my living room. On Mike's most recent visit to New York a couple of years ago, on a beautiful day when the city was at its shining best, I went to New York to have lunch with him on a tree-shaded patio. That turned out to be the last time I saw Mike. The point of this, I think, is that one's friendships can wax and wane, while at the same time remaining strong and true. And in this increasingly fraught and fragmented world, it's so important to sit around a table from time to time, sharing ideas and opinions and music and laughter.
My grandpa, I'm Tatum, by the way, Marion's daughter and Mike's granddaughter. He was the greatest person I ever got to know, and at the beginning of the summer, we found out that he had brain cancer, which at the time seemed like the worst thing in the world, but it turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because over the past 6 months, I've gotten to come out and see him more times than I ever have in my life, and I got to spend more time with him in this last year than I ever have before. And it was so amazing getting to be here with him and getting to go around town with him. And he would always stop at every single musician, whether they were playing on a drum or a box or whatever they were playing. He would stop and he would wait to the end of the song. And then he would insist that we stay there and talk to them for at least 20 minutes before moving on. every time me and Cade were here, we're not very adventurous eaters, but we would eat every type of food, a different kind of food every day, and I think we tried more food this summer than we ever have before. He was just such an amazing person, and I'm so glad that I got to spend this summer watching him and being with him.
The most successful lung implant ever.
My name is Dave Mullen, and I was trying to do the math on the way over here today. Something like 25 years ago, my friend Sister Dorcas asked me if I would play for her Scottish country dance classes. And I hadn't played anything at all in nearly 10 years, and I had never played Scottish, so I naturally said, sure. She sent me a week later to Madison, where there was a social dance, and I met Mike, and I sat and listened and learned, and that experience of Mike has been a profound and fantastic part of my adulthood. We formed a band with Susan Conan from St. Charles, Illinois, called Or the Border, because as you can see, there's a border there. And fairly early on, I think we were going to St. Charles maybe for the first dance that we played down there. Mike and I were driving together, and we were so enjoying each other's company, we realized we were 45 minutes south of where we were supposed to have turned to go to Susan's house. There wasn't a lot of rehearsal that got done that afternoon. But then after that dance, with a bunch of the folks from the Chicago Club and from St. Charles in particular, we went out for a drink at establishment there in St. Charles, and we all gathered and we found seats out on their terrace, and we looked around and we couldn't find Mike. Mike had, in the 3 minutes that it had taken us to pass through the bar, made friends with the band that was playing in the bar, talked his way into sitting in with this blues band in his kilt, and they kept referring to him as Angus for the rest of the evening. So thank you, Mike.
Anybody want to stand up a second? We've been sitting for an hour. It's pretty hard on you, or should we keep going?
Keep going.
Okay.
Hello?
I'll just stay here. I met Mike when he came to Capitol Lakes, and he was a treasure. Everybody got to know him because he was so friendly and very helpful. When we went through a bankruptcy, Mike went to court, and then he came back and told us what happened. We trusted his answers better than the administration. And Mike was very good to the staff. Many of them were from South American countries and had many issues of bringing their family over, and Mike pro bono helped so many people. And they were really crushed when they heard about Mike's passing. And I had personal connections with Mike because once a month I'd run a sing-along, and Mike would come, sometimes with the accordion, sometimes he just played the piano, and we sang, and I was always invited when he sponsored the singing group at the Capitol Lakes when it was his turn, music night. And I bought two of those great big books, and I see some of the songs from that book that we were singing tonight. And then I knew him when he went to assisted living. My husband had been there. And he just cheered up people in assisted living. He just gave us so much. And we miss him.
Did Kim make it up from Illinois? No. So she sent a story. This is from Kim Troth. So she says, I knew Norma and Mike from Prairie Unitarian when I lived in Oregon, Wisconsin. Norma, at the young age of 70, was my birthing coach when I had my second child. She helped coach me in hypnobirthing, something she herself used when giving birth. Norma and I both enjoyed dancing, gardening, and had a shared interest in human rights. We were also in a study group together through Prairie called A Year to Live. I knew Mike mostly because I knew Norma. Mike always seemed quick to smile and loved to share funny stories. I remember him telling me the one about his hip surgery and how the doctors made one side shorter than the other. Mike always said he literally got screwed. I feel very fortunate to have known the kind, caring, and loving side of Norma and Mike. They were truly one of a kind, a hard act to follow. But then again, I don't think they were trying to follow anyone's act. They created their own, as we all should.
Then I'll tell the story of my friend David Rolnick, who was a public defender in Walworth County. And Mike was the administrative court judge. And David said all the public defenders who were representing some sometimes pretty guilty people They all look forward to Mike, getting drawing Mike as the administrative court judge, because he was fair, he was respectful, he was well prepared. They didn't expect that they would get a good ruling necessarily or something favorable for their client, but they knew it would be just. And anyway, he asked me to share that.
Anybody else? And for those of you who don't feel like getting up in front of a room of people, completely understand, but that's why we'll be here. So we've got the place till about 7, so we can share stories of them.
I try to be brief. I'm not much of a public speaker, but I would be dishonest if I couldn't stand up here and say what I needed to say about Mike and Briggs, Mike Briggs, the Briggs family, Norma and Mike. If it wasn't for Mike and Norma, I wouldn't have had a place to live in Madison. Now, I don't mean that I was homeless. It's just that when you come to a new city, the way times can be, landlords can say, well, you know, we're not looking for that type of person. The only thing Mike and Norma wanted to know is, will the rent be paid? That was it. As a matter of fact, they tried to check my bank references, but they couldn't get bank references. And they looked at me, you sure the rent will be paid? And I said, yeah, okay, it's yours. That was the first part of it. And somehow I wound up being the manager of the building from being the tenant. That's because somebody needed to paint a ceiling. They asked one of the college students types to paint it. They said, no. I said, I'll paint it because it had nothing to do. And that developed into me being the manager. But more importantly, they treated me like family. I you know, like Mike is Mike, you know. I had never seen one person that knew so many people and so many different type of people. And I don't mean on the surface, he would bring me and show me, some, you know, that's so-and-so. He's such and such so-and-so. How in the world do you know about this? This is a guy going in the Capital Foods Center. But that was the way it was, and people knew him. But I have to thank God that I had the gift of meeting people like Mike and Norma and their children and family. Because life has been good as a result of knowing them. Thank you.
Is Aaron Bosch here?
I am.
Do you want to come up and read your story? It's better than me.
I should just tell
it's such a lovely story.
So I knew Mike Briggs and Norma through Prairie Unitarian, and my daughter, who's now 42, when she was a senior in high school, she was not having such a great end of her senior year. She was not a happy camper. But I convinced her I asked her if she would like to do a voice recital and sing 5 songs, and I didn't think she would say yes, but she did say yes, which meant that I now had to find her an accompanist, and I had to find her an audience. So I worked on that, and I asked Mike if he would maybe be the accompanist. And he said, oh, sure, he would love to do that. So he came to our house one day and played these songs on this old, very old piano that I had bought for $25 at a Prairie Service auction. I don't think it was a great piano, but he, you know, she had 5 songs she wanted to sing, and he could play them immediately. You know, there wasn't really any rehearsal for Mike. Mostly what the rehearsal was for Nora and for him to make her feel so comfortable and so confident that she could do this, that she wasn't sorry she had agreed to do this thing. And the day that we had the recital at Prairie, and some family came from Illinois and Michigan, and friends from Madison were there. I had enough of an audience. And he just made her feel so comfortable, and it was a wonderful day, and he interacted with my family, and I would just always be grateful for that.
Is there anybody else? was I recruited, Aaron. Okay, so now we've got a song that Carolyn recorded with my dad. Tell the story? Yeah.
Well, I've always sung with him. I remember him going probably off to a city council meeting, and probably as an observer because I was young, and he handed me the guitar and he said, "These are the chords for The Fox Went Out on a Chilly Night." And I knew the song, and he showed me the chords, and he came back the next day, and I think my fingers were probably puffy from pressing on, but I knew how to play that song. So songs and singing with him all my life. We used to trap sopranos who could sing Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly, because he knew an alto line and I knew another alto line. So if we had a soprano who could carry the lead, we would happily sing along with him. So in the last 3 years, I've sung in the Portland area with a choir called Threshold Choir. We sing in a big rehearsal, but we go in small group, three or four, to sing at bedside for people who are dying. And I've been coming this summer more often to Madison to see Dad after his diagnosis with melanoma. So in July, I was at Capitol Lakes. Dad was napping. It was a couple hours before I was to go. And there were two ladies who I recognized the music, and it turned out they were missing a third to go sing at Capitol Lakes for folks in the Alzheimer's area, and then also on the third floor of the Rehabilitation Center. So here are these two ladies, and I sit with them, and I sing with them, and they say, come sing with us. So we went to my dad's room at Assisted Living, and he suggested that he wanted to hear us sing Dona Nobis Pace, and he sung along with us. We have a recording of Dad.
Nobis Pace, Dona Nobis Pace, Dona Nobis Pace,
Patricia didn't tell a story, but Patricia met, where'd you guys, you met him?
Mike would go to the accordion jamboree, and 15 years ago, he would, and get tired of listening to everybody on the stage, so he'd go out to the parking lot and play there. And so I thought, who is this wonderful musician playing out in the parking lot? So year after year, he and I would play whatever we could think of or remember. And people would say, well, why don't you come inside? And Mike said, no, that's okay.
So for all those who want to join us, we're going to sing Amazing Grace. And so we can end Amazing Grace in a clean note, and you won't have to listen to me anymore. So after Amazing Grace is over, then we'll break for 20-25 minutes. We're going to clear the chairs in the back area, and the Scottish country dancers, they'll do a medley. So those who are interested in the dance, come back down here. And then after the dancers, there'll be 10, 15 minute break, and the Prairie Choir is going to sing a couple of songs down here again. And then we've got the place till 7. I think other people brought instruments. You have songbooks. So again, you go down that hall. There's going to be wine and water and beer and cheese and that kind of stuff. And then there's all kinds of memorabilia. Helen did a wonderful job. My favorite is the political war. But so let's see. Everything's that way, and I forgot to mention there's also a little room at the end. They call it the Max Gabler Living Room. So you can go, there are tables set up, and it's nice, it overlooks the garden. So